7. Yes, we got past Daniel 6. and it's a transition. The first six chapters of Daniel are kind of historical narratives on these amazing stories of Daniel, who begins as a young man, a teenager, taken captive into Babylonian captivity with King Nebuchadnezzar, the most powerful ruler in the world at that time, and how he faithfully serves God by serving this king. Daniel's got a government job, basically, and working for the national leader, and that's kind of cool. But he also subverts those around him, sometimes boldly, sometimes subtly, just with his faith. And because we all want people to know God and experience salvation. And so in this story, we get to Daniel 7, and it's a transition because now Daniel 7 actually parallels Daniel 2. In Daniel 2, it's Nebuchadnezzar who has a dream of these images and kingdoms and how, you know, and it's this statue with, and each part of the statue is made of different metals, and each metal represents a different kingdom until this rock comes out of the heavens, a rock that was not cut out by human hands, meaning it's a rock made by God, and we now know spiritually Jesus says that's himself coming when he destroys the statue, obliterates it in God's kingdom rules. And now we have Daniel having a dream about kingdoms and God's sovereignty, and this, it's fascinating how this the book of Daniel, though it's historical and there's stories, but there's parallels to take it deeper and deeper into understanding God and who he is, and that's kind of what this morning's about. So let's pray as we get into this, because it gets into profound things. We want to see how God is sovereign through the book of Daniel and how people like Daniel are faithful. And that's our focus of the sermon series. And we need the encouragement. We need the insights. So our Father in heaven, we come in Jesus Christ. And Jesus, you are the fulfillment of the prophets. And you're the fulfillment of the law and the fulfillment of the Psalms. And we need to understand how you are the fulfillment in this story too. And Lord, these dreams are hard to understand things. And we need your Holy Spirit. We need you to give us the revelation and understanding, Lord. And some of these things are hard, and we won't know or understand the fullness of them until we stand before you in heaven. But we trust there are things in this that you want us, your people, to know. So help us do that. Jesus, in your name, amen. Well, let me ask this, let's get us started. And by the way, I love just input and stuff as we're going, and because we're in this together like the worship. So maybe, you know, just actively in your own spirit, listen and ask questions. But I'll start with one question. And raise your hand if you can say this is true of you. Are you human? One hand and go up. I'm curious about that. I'll talk to you later. okay, so you're human, huh? Well, okay, answer this question just to yourself. How much? How much are you human? No, I haven't had too much coffee. Hang in there. All right, so this morning I want us to look at Daniel's dream, because I really think it has there's a interesting contrast going on in the story of beast and God and the human one. And so let's just dive right in and begin with verse 1. And we're going to read most of this chapter. And it begins in verse 1 by saying, the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Okay, we ended in Daniel 6 with Daniel being thrown in the lion's den by King Darius. But so we're going backwards, and who remembers what happened to Belshazzar? Not Belshazzar, which is Daniel's Babylonian name, but Belshazzar. Remember that story? Writing on the wall, exactly. And so Belshazzar was three kings after King Nebuchadnezzar and of Babylon, the last king of Babylon, and in his pride and arrogance, he defiled God's temple vessels that were stolen from Jerusalem by King Nebuchadnezzar, and it was just this wild, drunken party. And so he got confronted, and there was no humbling of his heart, and there was this writing on the wall basically saying his time was done. And so that's how his story ended. And Daniel is writing this story in the first year that Belshazzar is reigning in Babylon. And it says, goes on to say, Daniel saw a dream and a vision of his head as he lay in his bed. And then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And by the way, sound effects, that comes natural to me. But when you read the Bible, it really helps if you live what you read. Enter into the story. Put yourself in the shoes of that person, okay? And how many of you have ever had a crazy, wild dream before? We might as well start there. See lots of hands. Like what was that, right? And sometimes they're just silly dreams because of the awesome Chinese food you had that night. But sometimes God actually speaks in dreams, and he still does, people, in dreams and visions. I could tell you several of my own, just this morning, and there's times where one of the things you know is when you wake up, man, it is vivid. Your emotions are all stirred up in you, and you can't let it go, and sometimes that's an indication. But so Daniel has a dream that, man, it's powerful, and he knows this dream is from God. And so he saw the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first one was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. Its first beast. And behold, another beast, a second one like a bear. And it raised up on one side. It was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And it was told, arise and devour much flesh. After this, I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with 4 wings and a bird, 4 wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. Man, it's just each creature is getting weirder and weirder, right? And verse 7, and after this, I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth, and it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little horn, before which 3 of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like of a man and a mouth speaking great things, which means boastfully. Pretty crazy, huh? Well, that's it. I want to invite the worship team up now to I want to pause there just for a second because, you know, you're thinking, who cares? You know, it wasn't my dream. And why do we take time to look at these strange things sometimes, especially in the Old Testament where, man, let's just get to one of the books in the New Testament that can help me, you know, with my job, my marriage, my kids, something, you know, really useful here, right? But what you need to understand is the moment you put your faith in Jesus Christ, you become one of God's people. And as one of God's people, this becomes your story all of a sudden. This is part of our story, these things we read, and it's something meant for us to understand. This is not, don't think of this as this is a separate group of people called Israelites and Jews, and it's stories of things that have nothing to do with this. This has everything to do with you and me. Trust me. Will you trust me? So Daniel has this wild dream, and what we see just right in the beginning of this is there are these beasts. And who are these beasts, right? And they seem, and Daniel knows, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but the Jewish readers of that time understand God used imagery, and that's what God's doing with dreams. He's using pictures and imagery as a correlation to something else. But in this dream, there's these series of beasts, these series of nations that seem to dominate and ravage the world. And before we talk about them, let's see how this dream ends, continues. And, well, yeah, let's read on. So then it says, as I looked in verse 9, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took a seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, and its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out before him. A thousands and thousands served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. And I want to pause at this moment. Okay, so first, well, in verse 11 says, and I looked, and then became the sound of the great words of the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed and its body destroyed of this fourth beast, and it was given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season of time. So this story, and so I do want to pause at this point and say, let's, before we go on, let's understand, first of all, what is this, what the deal with this beast, because Daniel was super troubled by this. And we're going to read that there's three characters in this dream, and there's these beasts, but then there is this ancient one, and then we're going to read about this one called the Son of Man. And beginning in this, the Ancient of Days is, who does that sound like? Who does that sound like to you? God. And Daniel's going to ask for an interpretation of this, but this part of the dream is not interpreted because the Jewish people understood that the Ancient of Days is God. No, it's not the Ancient One of Doctor Strange, okay? The ball-headed chick. You know, this is God, and he has hair, all right? And the picture of God in this is one where God has these white clothes, okay? He's dressed in white, and the white represents his radiant purity. And this is a picture of judgment, and what we know in his purity is that God is absolutely pure in his judgment. So this is a characterization of your God, and he is pure, and you can trust his judgments when the end comes. But also notice that God also had this hair of pure wool, right? And you ever seen those pictures, the, you know, caricatures, the animations of God sometimes, even in the, right, the Renaissance paintings, and white, gray hair, and gray represents what? Age. And with age comes wisdom. And so our God has this wisdom associated with great age, which means he can rightly determine what is good and what is evil. And so he's wise in his judgments. But not only that, did you notice what else he has? And I love this. It's like, and his throne was a fiery flames, and its wheels were burning fire. What's that a picture of? God's hot rod, right? The Godmobile. And, you know, and when I was growing up, I don't see it nowadays, but it's funny how things, and even in our world, we seem to reflect things that are very spiritual and very godly. And so in my day, sometimes you would still see cars with flames. painted on the side. And so this is, God's, flaming hot rod. And you're thinking, well, what could that represent, right? Well, what this represents is God's power, which means he has the power to enforce his judgments. And we need to know that, because don't we sense that not everything is good in our world, and there needs to be a putting of right? Well, that's what judgment means. And so in this, we see the Ancient of Days. And then, now let's just finish the part of the dream that talks about the Son of Man. Verse 13, "And I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a Son of Man. And he came to the Ancient of Days, who was represented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all the peoples and nations and the language should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me." And they would, you too, wouldn't they? Like, holy moly, what was that all about? And you have that sense, like, I need to understand this. But he's still in his vision, in his dream. And so he approaches one of those who stood there. So where is he? He's in the heavenlies. And so I don't know if there's an angel. You know, in heaven, there's more than just angels. There's these celestial beings, spiritual beings that God created. And he approaches some angel dude or something. And he asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of things. These four great beasts are four kings. So there it is. Four kings who shall arise out of the earth. So these four beasts represent kings and kingdoms that arise out of the earth. Pretty straightforward. But the saints of the Most High, well, let's just pause there for a moment. Let's talk about those four kingdoms, because what is profound about Daniel and troubling to many that don't want to believe that this was written in Daniel's day is that there is such accuracy in the symbolism of these kings. And they don't know what to do with it. So they want to say, well, this dream was written, sometime in Jesus' day or later, because there's no way a man could understand how things are going to play out in history. But doesn't God? And so there's just an assumption that there isn't a God in those that want to argue for late writings of this book. But let's just begin with the lion. Now, this one is and you'll see later in the book of Daniel, if you were to read the whole book, this is King Nebuchadnezzar. This is Babylon, the one that we just read in the first four chapters. And this lion has wings, and this is representing how quickly he seems to be able to conquer the world. And Daniel knew of Nebuchadnezzar, and what's interesting is what happened to the wings. They're plucked off, right? And don't we remember that when Nebuchadnezzar lifted himself, right, as he stood on his palace, he boasted of his greatness and put himself equal to deity. And what happened to him? He was made like a beast. He was made like a beast. And so he ate grass, and actually I think we have a picture, from, I think we still have one of the pictures of, there he is. There's a famous painting, I think it's by Van Gogh, if I remember right, of King Nebuchadnezzar, and he looks like a beast. He's still a man, though. He didn't become a beast, but he became like a beast. And it wasn't until 7 years then, in his insanity, he lost all reason, which is something that beasts don't have reason. And then he himself says, when he looked up to heaven and acknowledged God, God gave him his reason back, he says. And so this is a picture, the wings plucked, now he's humbled, and that's where that story stops. So there's the first, the first kingdom with King Nebuchadnezzar. But then there's a bear, right? And we're actually just, Daniel's just entering into this new kingdom, and it's the Mede and Persian kingdom. And so this bear had one side raised up higher than another, which is symbolic of that the Persian kingdom was actually stronger than the Medes. And this kingdom, we read, was greatly violent, and it's depicted as a bear devouring, just eating and devouring people. Okay, the leopard, and this is cool. This is cool. So how could Daniel have known this? Then the leopard actually represents Alexander the Great and his Greek Empire. And what's in the image of a leopard with these four wings is because Alexander the Great actually conquered the known world at that time by age 32. Swift, a leopard is swift, put wings, it's really fast, right? But it had what? How many heads? Well, Alexander died in 323 BC, unexpectedly, just soon after he conquered the world. He actually never got to rule the world, but he conquered it, and his four generals divided up the Greek kingdom and ruled it. Huh. Fascinating, huh? So we keep in mind that Daniel wrote this long before Alexander the Great ever came. But then there's this fourth beast, right? And there's something that says, actually, the word different is used about this beast. And it doesn't seem to correlate to any recognizable creatures. And it's more terrifying. And it's got these horns. And again, an Old Testament reader, you would seen the scriptures, horns are used to represent strength and power. And so, and it's this creature of combined kingdoms. And some would say it's, you know, the Roman Empire. But we're going to talk more about this in a bit here, because a lot of this is going to be focused on this fourth beast that seems so different. So in this, we see these four kingdoms, and they're just like ravaging the world and devouring it. But then in Daniel's dream, we see that the ancient one, God, is still in control, the Ancient of Days, and he brings evil to an end, doesn't he? But then we read about this Son of Man. Who's the Son of Man? I knew you were going to say that. Jesus. Because that's the answer when we're not sure, right? I'm not saying you're wrong, but what does the angel say in verse 18 after he tells Daniel who the kings are, the beasts are? But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever. I love this phrase, forever, forever, and ever. That's cool. I don't know. It's just like, man, it just excites my soul, you know, and that the beasts don't reign forever, forever, and ever. And so, do you catch that? Who are the saints? You and me. Yeah, Bob. Those that put their faith in God. And at this time, Daniel understood that it was God's people, the Jews, who are in captivity. And so this dream is a very encouraging dream. It's terrifying, but it's a dream of good news. And that's the first point. It's a dream of good news because we win. Is that a message you need to hear? Is our world still looking a little like it's in chaos? Are there some insane people doing crazy, you know, rulers that you can think of, like in North Korea, that's just doing crazy things, or other rulers? And doesn't it even feel like now we're just on the brink of war at any time? You know, and so have things really dramatically changed that much? But in this, what this is telling us, and hold on to, yeah, but I don't know, I still feel like it's Jesus. Okay, hold. Okay, don't lose that thought. But what we're seeing here is the Son of Man. And actually, the Son of Man is a Hebrew word just meaning, you know, the human one, in a sense. The human one. And the human ones identified as those, in this case, that follow God. But these other rulers were not human so much, they were what? beast. And so remember, this is figurative language. Can you hang in there with me? Will you hang? We're not done yet. Okay? I don't want you confused, but we'll sort this out. But at this point, we need to pause and say, this is good news for Daniel and for us in a world that continues to be ravaged by beast. God is still in control when it doesn't look like it. God is still in control. And even when it seems like evil is having its way in our world. Do you know that most of you are from the most violent century in history, the 20th century? We were, the MP3 group of pastors, we were had an international justice mission come and share. And they even talked about how in currently we have the greatest slavery our world has seen. And if I remember, I was 34 million, and it's made up of those in bonded servitude and sexual trafficking. And you put that together, and we have the largest amount, you know, the greatest number of slavery going on. And so we need this good news that nothing is going to prevent God's people from receiving and possessing the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. Amen? So that's the beginning point. This is what we need to know when things look troubling and bleak. But the story goes on, and here is where, you know, it's like we could stop there, and the angel gave the interpretation. But isn't there something in us that goes, man, I feel like there's more to this dream that I need to understand at a deeper level. So especially concerning this fourth beast, don't we want to understand that one because there's something different about that beast? So the next point this morning is that the mega beast must be defeated before the human one can reign. All right? So if we're not going to read it in verse 19. Daniel talks and retells the story we just read about this dream. And he says, then I desired in verse 19 to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest. And he talks about how it's exceedingly terrifying. And this beast, you know, with claws of bronze and teeth of iron, and it would devour, and what it didn't devour, it would break into pieces, and what it couldn't break, it stamped, you know, with what was left on the earth with its feet. And then it had that weird horn with the eyes and the mouth, and there was something about this. Daniel didn't really he had a category in which to put the other beast, but this fourth one didn't seem to fit any category. And it was almost like with all this iron and bronze, it almost seemed like a robot or something. And because it couldn't be associated with any normal living creature. Well, how could we expect Daniel to know that this fourth beast was the Devastator from Transformers? There it is with its iron claws, and it's frightening, and I'm just geeking out here, but actually there's things in the scriptures and images that these writers can't put to words. But this isn't an animal in any form, is it? You know, and that's, you know, it's like this super beast. It's like this mega robo super beast compared to all the other beast. And the Devastator is actually, what's kind of cool about that, just for fun, is a fourth kingdom is a combination of kingdoms, and actually this Devastator is one of the Decepticons, and it's called a combiner, and it's combined of all these different Decepticons to become this very ferocious evil robot, you know. and actually in his description of it, in the second Transformer movie, he's in that one where they all combine, and it's devastating, and all he knows is pain and rage, and lives out of pure instinct, you know, and there is no reasoning with him. And so the super, you know, there you go, Jason, you know, he likes these kind of things. But the super robot beast makes war on the saints, doesn't it? And we read this in verse 22 through 20, 21 and verse 20. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High. And the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. And so here we see what this super robot mega beast is trying to do. And we read on in verse 23, thus he said, this angel, to Daniel, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different. There's that word again, different from all the other kingdoms. This isn't just a man, an evil man ruling the nations. There's something different about this one. And it shall devour the whole earth and trample it down and break it to pieces. As for the ten horns out of this kingdom, ten kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the former ones and shall put down three kings. He shall speak words against the Most High. So now his attack is boastful words against God and shall wear out the saints, the Son of God. Remember, the Son of God is the image of the saints of the Most High, and shall think no to change the time and the law, and they shall be given to him in his hand for a time, times, and a half a time, which is time one, times two, half a time. So it's three and a half, which is half of seven, which is the number used of completion in God's imagery. And so in this, we see that he prevails against God's people. And what does the super robot beast do? Well, he boasts against God. He wears out the saints. That's why we need to persevere. He changes the times and the law. And he rules for this three and a half times. Now, who is he? Who is this super beast? And this gets into interesting stuff that we can't spend a lot of time into. But, you know, first of all, he's not Barney the purple dinosaur. Okay, when Barney was out there, people are going, because there it's like he's the Antichrist. And so we start looking for, and one of the families actually told me their mom actually thought maybe Barney was the Antichrist. But let's set aside that option. And option one, when the scholar, and all these scholars, you know, have biblical good basis for these things, is he's a historical real person. You know, first of all, he's already come, this fourth beast, and before Jesus arrived on the scene. And so we know that Antiochus the fourth came, and he was a really nasty ruler. And he tried to violently force people, not just into his culture, but his beliefs. And he actually banned the Jewish people from circumcision. He changed, like this sounds like the festivals and the times. And he ended the sacrificial system that God's people had. He even defiled God's temple by sacrificing a pig on the altar. And the Jews that would not deny their faith, he actually killed in the temple courtyard. And so he's a really violent guy that sacrificed, God's people. So he was really a bad dude. And he was in the second century book, 1975 to 164 BC. So he's just before the Roman Empire took over. But the thing with that one is God's kingdom didn't come as described when his reign was done. And so others want to say another option is the beast is Rome, which will continue in some strange way even through today until we get to the end times in Revelation where we see the Antichrist come and the fullness of God's kingdom come. And that's not a bad option. You know, Left Behind series, how many of you know the Left Behind books and movies and so we have those kind of, and that's one camp there. But is there a possible another option? Well, what would Jesus, what would he say? Who would he say this fourth beast is? What title does Jesus use of himself the most? Son of Man. He actually never calls himself the Christ, the Messiah. He receives that title, but he never calls himself that. Open up to Matthew chapter 26. Where does Daniel get that title, Son of Man? Daniel 7. Jesus gets his title, Son of Man, from Daniel 7. And we read in Jesus, in the Passion Week, the last week, he is actually now standing before Caiaphas, who's the high priest. And and he is facing false charges. It's a mock trial. And in this, they're wanting to try and find ways to falsely accuse him because Jesus is innocent, and they can't find anything to stick. And it says in verse 63, but Jesus remained silent. And the high priest said to him, Caiaphas, I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Because Jesus wanted people to come to a spiritual understanding of the truth. So he was always, I like what Jesus says. He says, you have said so. Like, what? Caiaphas is going, what do you mean? I said so. What's that supposed to mean? How's that answering my question? I like his cryptic remark. It's kind of like, you know, are you saying I think you are the Messiah, the Son of God? But then Jesus goes on to say, after he says, you have said so, but I tell you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. He's quoting Daniel 7. Jesus not only got his identity, got his identity for people to understand who he is from Daniel 7, but Daniel 7 becomes the roadmap, because what happens to the Son of Man? What does the fourth beast do? The fourth beast tramples and stamps and destroys everyone. And he destroys the Son of Man. Then the high priest tore his robes and said, he has uttered blasphemy. What further witness do we need? You have heard his blasphemy. What is your judgment? And the answer, he deserves death. Jesus is brought the kingdom of God with him. They can't stand him because he has done nothing but loved people. He has healed people. He has raised the lame. He dines with the sinners. He's only done nothing but good. And they hate him because he's a threat to their power. But here, understand this, and he is saying that he identifies him as the Son of God, and he is going to be raised to the right hand of God. And so not only is he the human one in which will receive all dominion over nations, his kingdom will rule forever and will obey him, but he is also identifying himself as the Messiah, the one, the divine Son who will sit at the right hand of God in power. And they say blasphemy. But don't miss this key part when it comes to the fourth beast. If Jesus is identifying himself as the Son of Man, who is Caiaphas and his council? You see it? See it? He's the fourth beast. Caiaphas, who's who? He's a priest. Where is he? In the temple in Jerusalem. He's supposed to be God's representative, you know, of what it means to be fully human. And yet Jesus is saying, if I am the Son of Man, you are the beast, the fourth beast. Jesus is saying, the moment you trample me down is the moment I'm raised up to heaven. The moment you kill me is the moment I defeat you. The beast never expected this. I want you to understand, when we say Jesus is fully God, we can never forget that Jesus is fully man. He is the Son of Man. What does that mean? That means Jesus is the fulfillment of what it truly means to be human. We kind of use that phrase. Will you ever use that phrase when you mess up or something? You go, hey, only human. I'm only human. I'm only human. Don't get mad. Don't blame me. I'm only human, right? Actually, it's not accurate. I don't, you know, it's like I don't come against that, you know, because it'd be too long to explain to people when they say that. But actually, I want to say, no, you're not human. You're a beast. Or I'm a beast when I do this. God made us in the first chapter of the Bible, the first page, he made us in his image. To be fully human is to be fully in the image that God has put in us. It's not just what we do. Human is who we are. But it got defiled and broken inside us. We all have a little bit of the super mega robo beast in us, don't we? And when Jesus went to the cross, he died to defeat the beast. Ultimately, Satan, the reason why Daniel, this kingdom's different is because it's spiritual. And there is Satan who rules that kingdom, and he shows up and he finds vessels in which to invest his evil and his power. He was there in the garden causing Adam and Eve to rebel against God. So any time a person turns their back on God and rebels against him, they start moving into, you know, becoming the beast instead of living out the human image that God's put in us. So ask yourself, I mean, isn't there a little bit of the beast in you? There is in me. Don't we sense that there is more to us in that can be lived out in the reflection of God? You are more than the animal. You are more than an animal of instincts. What's a beast? A beast lives out of instinct and passions. When it's hungry, it eats. When its hormones rage, it mates. It protects itself. It does not reason and does not have the ability to sacrifice itself and control itself for the benefit of others. What's a mature human compared to an immature? You see? Immature is when it just, you know, somebody's just living out of their desires and their wants. There's no self-control because they're more of a beast. And then those of us that find power in Jesus Christ to live find the power to defeat the beast and become more human. So the Bible itself teaches in some way that we all have that beast in us. In Romans chapter 3, Paul takes a bunch of Old Testament quotes and says this about us. See, we're about to come. We're coming now to communion. And in this story, communion matters deeply. Paul says, "None is righteous, no, not one. No one understands. No one seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become worthless. No one does good, not even one. Their throat is an open grave. They use their tongues to deceive. The venom of asp, which is vipers, is under their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood, and in their paths are ruin and misery. And the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes." Daniel ends with these words in Daniel 7, verse 26 through 27. "But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away," talking about the beast, "and be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High." That's us. But then it goes into first person pronoun and goes, "His kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominion shall serve and obey him." So that's why this was confusing. Is it talking about a man or a people? And the answer is both. For under Jesus Christ, we win. We win. And I want to invite the worship team up. And I want to close with this verse. Take this verse to heart, Galatians 2:20, as we come to this table, and be asking yourself, in what way have you seen the beast live outside, come out in your, with your spouse, when you act in a way that's like, oh, this isn't what God would want. This is coming out of my anger or my desire to control, or in the workplace, that, you know, we feel threatened and we fight back and we protect territories. And there's these instincts of our children. You know, when do we ask beastly, you know, with our children? When do we act beastly with our friends? When are those times when you most feel that battle within you, the battle between the beast and the human one? What needs to happen to the beast? The beast must die. The beast must die so that the human one can thrive. You can't have it both ways. How does one die? Galatians 2:20. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life I live now in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave his life for me. So as we enter this worship time, bow your heads, close your eyes. It is in the compassion of the Son of Man that Jesus came. And he is the only perfect, full representation of God's image that he put in us. But he does not condemn us, he saves us. And the only way the beast can die in you and die in me is when we acknowledge that place it seems to live. So you bring the beast into the light, and Jesus puts it to death when you die to it and say, no more, I surrender that part of me to you. I see I have no control and I'm living instinctually and not living as a human one. And Jesus, make this your prayer now. Jesus, I accept your death. And I die to myself by surrendering all of who I am. I deny those passions and wants. And I will take up my cross and I will follow you as hard as it might be. I want to be like you. And I ask your Holy Spirit to give me the self-control, the power to live righteously and holy as my Creator made me to be. I invite you, Jesus, to save me. You are the Son of Man, and I want to be like you. And I make you Lord in my life. I ask you to rule in my life, and I surrender all.